مرحبا.
ني هاو.
هالو.
أهوي.
هالو.
هالو.
بونجور.
نمستي. ياسو.
هيا.
تشاو.
تشاو.
أنيوغاسيو.
مرحبا.
بريفيت.
هالو.
I'm Liz Jones, race and culture reporter at KUOW. During this election year, refugee resettlement has become a political flashpoint. The rhetoric has raised questions about newcomers in the U.S. How many should we bring in? And what happens after they arrive here? Today, we kick off a series to introduce some refugees at the heart of this debate. We followed three refugees through their first year in the Seattle area. For many, this year can feel like a race against the clock to set up a new life. We start with Tutu's story, a young man from Burma, grappling with English and big choices for his future. Day one in America, at the airport baggage claim.
Good.
Tutu lugs a bag off the carousel. He's 20 years old, playful, smiling, with long bangs and torn jeans. He looks pretty American, but he barely speaks English. Later, he'll tell me that really scared him. How would he get by if he can't communicate? It's a fear he pushes aside. He's not supposed to be a kid anymore. Tutu's cousin, Sheltar, is here to greet him after many years apart. They cry, but they don't hug. That's the culture in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. Tutu came here alone as a refugee. He'll live with Sheltar, who made this same journey 7 years ago, from a refugee camp in Thailand to Seattle. In the past decade, Burmese refugees have topped the list of new arrivals to the U.S. It's a relatively new community finding its way here. It's around sunset when we arrive at Sheltar's two-bedroom apartment in Kent. Her sister's family also lives here. Tutu brings a total to 9. He'll sleep on a twin bed in the living room. Tutu's his full name, by the way. In Myanmar, you don't use last names. I'm curious to see what Tutu's brought from home. He fishes a picture frame out of his backpack.
Ah, they had a girlfriend.
It's his girlfriend at the refugee camp.
What does it say there?
Forever.
Forever love.
He pulls a Bible from his bag, and then another.
How many Bibles did you bring?
Yeah.
We count at least 4, in his native Karen and in English, a language he's eager to practice.
Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
Hello, friend. How are you?
That sounds good.
Yeah. And I know you are very tired now. So
that's Cordelia Revels, Tutu's resettlement case manager with Jewish Family Service. An interpreter is also along to help. The agency will help Tutu with his initial resettlement for up to 3 months. They go over small items.
So we have a toothbrush and toothpaste.
And then larger goals.
We'll start working on everything else, like signing up for English classes and looking for a job and learning how to ride the bus. So we will be with you a lot in the next few days.
Tutu nods along to the interpreter. More than anything, he wants to learn English, maybe even be an interpreter himself someday. But he'll also need a job. Decisions like this matter as he sets the mold for his life here.
$20.
For now, Revels leaves Tutu a $20 bill, just for pocket money. He'll spend it in a few hours on a phone card to call his dad back in Thailand. Up until now, Tutu spent most his life in a refugee camp. His family is Karen, an ethnic minority in Myanmar. And for decades, military forces have attacked and burned ethnic villages. More than 1 million people have been displaced, including Tutu's family. Months after we meet, we briefly talk about this with an interpreter. At first, Tutu makes light of it.
He said before, while we moved to camp, I carried one chicken, and that's what I remember.
It's a child's memory. He was only about 5.
So it was just sudden. Sudden you had to pick up and leave?
Yeah, suddenly it was an attack. They tried to kill all the Karen people. So then my grandmother had to carry me out.
His grandmother later told him many people died on the way to Thailand. I ask about his other family.
No brother or sister?
No.
They passed away. Yeah.
What happened to your brother and sister?
He says his siblings got sick and died young. His mother left after he was born. In Thailand, Tutu settled into a routine life with his father and grandmother, but it was like living in a cage. And as he got older, his dad pushed him to leave and look for opportunity. Tutu wanted to stay, but he followed his dad's wishes. Now in America, Tutu is starting over again. His youth is on his side. Kids typically adapt easier than adults, but he's right on that line, somewhere in between. Remember, he's just 20. Tutu's first weeks here go by in a blur, full of so many first times. He figures out the bus system and how drivers don't like it if you hand them folded dollar bills or try to get on too soon, and that you fall over when the bus lurches forward.
Get some fish today.
His cousin Sheltar teaches him grocery store 101. By
the arm. Fresh today, like yeah. The date today. So.
The expiration date, yeah.
Okay, Joy. We do, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he asks this one, like expensive.
Well, then
we keep hard.
Does a lot of this stuff look strange to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Over there, like we eat like fresh. We didn't put in the freezer like that.
Tutu buys some ice cream. But at home, there's a whole pig stuffed in the freezer. So the ice cream goes in the fridge. He meets several times with an employment specialist named Summer.
Let's start by asking him about his education. Did he finish school in his country?
Tutu only got through 11th grade. That'll hurt his job prospects. A key goal of the U.S. resettlement program is for refugees to be self-sufficient and to get jobs in the first few months. Summer pushes Tutu to get a part-time job as soon as possible.
Because he needs to pay bills, the cash he receives from DSHS will not be enough to cover everything. And he said, only education, only school now.
They go around on this a few times.
I'll just have to think more about it. I don't want to push him.
For Tutu's first 8 months here, he gets government aid of $320 a month, as long as he's looking for work. It's not much, but it buys him a little cushion of time, and he wants to use it to learn English. It's his cousin Sheltar's advice. She and her husband never had this cushion. They had to pay the rent. And she says it made her feel bad, that maybe her coworkers didn't like her because she couldn't understand English. Tutu can set a different course. It's up to him now to take charge.
I need to sign in here.
This is Tutu on his first day in America, trying to spell his name for a caseworker.
It's Amatu now.
And here he is 6 months later.
Okay, let's go.
In English class.
That's good.
I take the seat next to him.
Hi. How are you?
Good. And you?
I'm good, thank you.
Almost since he arrived, Tutu has approached English like a full-time job, and it's paying off. We start to have conversations. I ask what's up with his cell phone.
My phone is not good.
Not working?
Yeah,
not working. What happened?
I don't know. I send money back. Can you use
it? Oh, okay. That's okay. I call at your house.
Yes.
Appointment.
Yes.
Yeah.
He takes the bus to class, about an hour each way, four nights a week. He arrives early, sits in the front, and confidently calls out answers.
Maybe three.
He makes his classmates laugh.
What did you say?
Just kidding.
You make a joke?
Yeah.
Class wraps up, and Tutu heads for the bus home.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So we'll talk more next week.
Yes. Okay, good night.
Good night.
Have a good day. Goodbye, teacher.
Bye. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
His teacher says he's well-liked and he works hard. She thinks he'll do well here. Tutu has mentioned before that he'd like to be an interpreter someday, but the odds are against him when it comes to English fluency. In census surveys, roughly 1 out of 5 Burmese people in the U.S. say they speak English well. The rest will find their worlds limited in many ways, especially in the job market.
Hi, Tu.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
At the 10-month mark, I visit Tutu a final time at his cousin's apartment. Something's changed. He recently turned 21, so I brought him a birthday card. He scratches at the envelope.
You didn't know?
You gave up already? Tu, you should learn to open this.
It's striking how many little things are still foreign to him, like a manila envelope.
Happy birthday. Thank you.
I mentioned that 21 is a big birthday in America, but it doesn't register. I turn to the interpreter.
Do you know why?
Yeah, of course. Everything is legal. you can go to clubs and...
But Tutu's not interested in any of that. His cousin helped him land a temp job with a big manufacturer in Redmond. He solders together electronic parts for $13 an hour. And at work, his conversation skills are expanding.
I know hasta mañana. And salud. And gracias. Gracias.
Most of his coworkers speak Spanish. Tutu stuck with English classes for the first 8 months, as planned. But now, there's no more time. His relatives have worked similar factory jobs for years, and perhaps he will too. Compared to all refugees in the U.S., Burmese are among the most likely to stay in low-wage jobs due to low levels of education. But it's still early days for this community here. More success will likely come with time. Tutu seems proud of his job. He helps pay the rent. He's paying off the travel loan for his flight to the U.S., and he sent $500 to his father back in Thailand.
He said that my grandma is still sick. And they need help and they need money. So he sent money.
When Tutu arrived here, his dad told him to only call home every 3 months. Maybe he thought that would make the transition easier, and maybe it did. It seems Tutu has grown up a lot this past year. He's passed into adulthood. He says life here is good. It's not what he expected, but he's not really sure what he expected. He misses family back home and familiar surroundings, and sometimes he'll ask a friend to drive him to a nearby park.
It's kind of far. More like in like a mountain, like so I can hear like the sound of the river and birds.
It sounds like the mountain village where he grew up, thousands of miles away, and it makes him happy. Our series continues. It's called Upon Arrival, and you can find more online at kuow.org.